from Redeemer Broadcasting. This is Holding All Things Together for this first weekend in February. I'm Dan Elmendorf.
And I'm Calvin Carter. Did you know that the United States has withdrawn from the World Health Organization? The WHO completely botched its handling of COVID-19, following the CCP model of lockdowns, mask mandates, and vaccine passports. We learned this after the fact and regret we didn't have the information when it was happening to us. The WHO also promotes digital health IDs, which can be used to create a CCP-style social credit system worldwide, a system of mass surveillance and totalitarian control. Today, we have the privilege of discussing this significant withdrawal from the WHO with Reggie Littlejohn, president of Anti-Globalist International.
They were rolling out these things that they called vaccine passports. This is in the very beginning of COVID. And I saw that the vaccine passport was actually an entree, a platform to the China social credit system. That's the connection between China and, you know, my work in China and my work on this. So any interoperable international digital ID can serve as a platform for the China social credit system, which is a tool of mass surveillance and totalitarian control. So they stopped calling them vaccine passports when, you know, we called them out on that. Now they just call them digital health IDs, but they are rolling them out as we speak all over Europe and all over the world. And we need to be very, very, not comply with any kind of a mandatory digital ID.
Also ahead, Pastor Bill Shisco discusses the importance of telling the truth. Later in the program, writer Jerry Wyss explores the scope of Adam's fall as it pertains to work and begins to point to the solution that God has provided even in our fallen state. Finally, we'll take another look at this week in history. All this just ahead on Holding All Things Together.
Well, we're dealing with the form of sound teaching, actually health-giving teaching is the word, and we're in the section of the Shorter Catechism on what God requires of us. Remember, sound teaching is not just doctrines about God and about creation and the fall and redemption. It's also about obedience. What does God require of us? And that is obedience to his revealed will. And specifically, his revealed will, when it comes to our obedience, is the moral law as summarized in the Ten Commandments. That's a great subject for your study for this year. A good volume on the Ten Commandments. Redeemer Broadcasting can advise you on that. The Catechism is a great place to begin. But do study the Ten Commandments, what's forbidden and what's required. Now, let me tell you a story. As we come to the ninth commandment, which is don't bear false witness against your neighbor. A dear lawyer friend served on the witness stand when he came back from what was a nationally known trial. I asked what his comment was, and it was this. He said, I'd never experienced such a situation where I was so lied against on the witness stand. And today, frankly, nobody trusts the word of anybody. We think of the psalmist who said, I said in my haste, all men are liars. It was in haste, but he felt like all people were liars. Well, we come now to the Shorter Catechism, number 76. What's the ninth commandment? You shall not bear false witness against your neighbor, and it requires the maintaining and promoting of truth between man and man. That's not all, but that's what I want to focus on today. Brothers and sisters and friends, tell the truth. In Matthew 5, verses 33 to 37, where Jesus is dealing with oaths, he summarizes it all by saying basically this, you ought not need to take an oath as a Christian. Let your yes be yes and your no be no. Why? because Christians are united to Christ, who is the truth. You want counterculture in our day of lies? Tell the truth. Say it, mean it, and do it. More next week.
On the Zoom line with us today is Reggie Littlejohn. She is part of the Anti-Globalist International Group. Reggie, it's great to have you back with us today.
Yes, thank you. I'm the founder and president of the Anti-Globalist International.
Ah, very good. Well, I hope it's going well. We have some really big news that came across the desk here this past week, and that was concerning WHO. And can you describe what was going on with the World Health Organization with respect to the United States?
Well, when President Trump was inaugurated last year, immediately on his first day in office, he signed an executive order to withdraw us from the World Health Organization. But according to the agreement that we have with the World Health Organization, it takes a year. You can give notice, but then it doesn't actually take effect until a year later. So it took effect on January 22nd. That was our last official day in the World Health Organization. So that was a huge day for me and for all the other people who were fighting and working so hard to get the United States to withdraw from the World Health Organization.
Yeah, I didn't know much about it. I still don't really. So maybe you can share with our listeners about it. But it came up a lot during the whole COVID fiasco.
Well, this is when, actually, President Trump withdrew us from the first World Health Organization during his first term. But then when COVID hit, and we were really able to see the corruption of that organization. So the World Health Organization is very deeply influenced by China. And so during COVID, what they did is basically they mimicked or repeated China's lies. So, for example, China was saying that the COVID virus is not transmissible, which clearly it is, and they implied that to stop travel from China was somehow racist. Meanwhile, they were stopping travel within China from Wuhan to stop its transmissibility. So they knew it was transmissible.
Sure.
But the World Health Organization went ahead and said, hey, you know, it's not transmissible. And so what that did is it enabled China to, you know, send people from Wuhan to all over the world and basically infect the world. Then the World Health Organization continued with the China model of handling COVID, which was lockdowns, mask mandates, vaccine mandates. And what that did is it did not stop the transmissibility of the virus, number one. And then number two, what it did is destroy economies all over the world.
Yes.
So the World Health Organization, their response to their complete failure during COVID was to demand more power. And they did this through international health regulation amendments and through the pandemic treaty. And between the two of these, the thing that made me turn my attention towards the World Health Organization is that they were rolling out these things that they called vaccine passports. This is in the very beginning of COVID.
Yes.
And I saw that the vaccine passport was actually an entree, a platform to the China social credit system. That's
yes.
The connection to China and my work in China and my work on this. So any interoperable international digital ID can serve as the platform for the China social credit system, mm-hmm. which is a tool of mass surveillance and totalitarian control. So they stopped calling them vaccine passports when, we called them out on that. Now they just call them digital health IDs, but they are rolling them out as we speak all over Europe and all over the world. And we need to be very, very not comply with any kind of a mandatory digital ID because what they can do with these IDs, the World Economic Forum actually has a chart on its website about these digital IDs and what they're going to do, which is you're going to need a digital ID in order to even access health care, open a bank account, travel, vote, own a communications device, pay your taxes, access government benefits like Medicare, Medicaid, whatever, Social Security. And so what that means is that if you step out of line, like, for example, by refusing to be vaccinated or by criticizing the government in China, they can just shut you off.
Yes, from they any can.
Any of those. And we saw that that could happen even in North America. Like several years ago, the Canadian truckers, they had a protest against vaccine mandates. And the Canadian government conspired with the Canadian banks to just cut them all off from their credit cards and their bank accounts. So this is one of many, many things. And I can talk about more reasons that the World Health Organization is a very bad organization. And I am delighted that the Trump administration has withdrawn us.
Yeah, absolutely. Today we're talking with Reggie Littlejohn, and you may have heard of her before in connection to helping basically Chinese babies. And could we segue really quick to that? What is your work there? Because people might say, oh, she's just knocking China. No, you're not at all. You have a heart for these people, right?
Well, when you say China, you have to distinguish between the people of China who are being brutally oppressed by their government, the Chinese Communist Party, and that was very clearly seen in their forced abortion policies under the one-child policy. So I'm an attorney. I represented a couple of refugees from China in the mid-90s, one of whom was forcibly sterilized, the other of whom was a victim of the forced abortion policy. And realized that the Chinese propaganda at the time was a lie, which they were saying the one-child policy was voluntary. It's not voluntary. And so I left the practice of law, and I established an organization, Women's Rights Without Frontiers, to fight for the rights of women in China to have their babies. Mm-hmm. And so then, in terms of the baby girls, these are not women in China are pressured, not by the government, but by their own families to abort or abandon their baby girls because of son preference. So we have a Save a Girl campaign in China. And you can go to womensrightswithoutfrontiers.org. That's womensrightswithoutfrontiers.org. And click the button to the upper right hand called Save a Girl and learn more about this and see a video where you will actually see the faces of some of the baby girls that we're saving.
Yes.
But we go to the mothers of these girls and say, congratulations on your daughter. Girls are as good as boys. And we understand that you are being pressured either to abort or abandon this baby girl. Or some of the women are just so impoverished that they don't have the calories to nurse their babies. They just can't produce milk. And so then they have to give their daughter away because they can't afford to buy milk powder. There's so much tragedy that continues to go on in the Chinese countryside. So we go to them and we say, we will give you $25 a month to empower you to keep your baby daughter. And so that's the money that comes through donations. If you want to help a mother keep her daughter, just go to womensrightswithoutfrontiers.org. And click on Save a Girl. There's a big red button on the right side of the homepage. and you can learn a lot more about this. But we have saved hundreds of baby girls in China through this program.
That's wonderful. That's wonderful. And it shows you where your heart is at. So we started off talking about the WHO. And we're out of the WHO. Thank the Lord. And some people might say, oh, you hate science, or you hate people, or whatever their excuse is. And so if you were to summarize the WHO now in 1 minute and why we shouldn't be in it, and thank the Lord we're no longer, what would be the bottom line?
Well, I mean, it's ridiculous to say that people who want to exit the WHO hate science, because the WHO got the science wrong. They're the ones who said that it was not transmissible. They were promoting this, 6 feet apart, which was totally not science-based. We have our own scientists. Our own scientists in the United States are as good as or better than the scientists at the WHO. And we will listen to our scientists figure out what's wrong if we have another pandemic and what is the best way to handle it.
Sure.
So it's not about hating the science. It's about listening to people that we know have the best interests of the United States at heart instead of people at the WHO. And you wonder, you know, who they have at heart, because they are so corrupt and aligned with China. So we want to look to our own scientists that we know are loyal to us.
Yes. Well, it's very helpful. And is there a website where people can go to check out the Anti-Globalist International group that you that you're the president of?
Yeah, it's antiglobalist.net. That's antiglobalist.net. And there's a lot of information on there.
Good.
About the World Health Organization, the United Nations, you know, all kinds of stuff on there.
Well, I want to thank you very much, Reggie Littlejohn, for coming on today. Keep up the good work. May God bless you and keep you in his care. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Thanks for joining us for Holding All Things Together. Your gifts to this program help us with future production costs and distribution. If you'd like to support us, our mailing address for your gift is Redeemer Broadcasting, Post Office Box 1520, Olive Bridge, New York, 12461. Thanks.
Although work itself is not a curse, Adam, the raw materials he works with, and the process of completing tasks and maintaining what has been completed are cursed because of Adam's fall. We experience this daily, though many prefer not to acknowledge it as a problem. But we must acknowledge it as a problem to work toward a solution. Today, Jerry Wyss explores the scope of Adam's fall as it pertains to work and begins to point to the solution that God has provided, even in our fallen state. Jerry is a frequent contributor to Holding All Things Together and is a writer for Christian Renewal magazine.
It's unlikely that the term good news would have much meaning for the pre-fallen Adam. His life and life's work were all good all the time. For the term good news to have meaning, we must realize that we are in a bad situation. With that realization, good news becomes good, very good indeed. Good news is another term for gospel. The good news there is that in our bad situation of sin, consequent suffering and death, God has shone as though a beam of blinding light, the fact of his Son having given himself as a ransom for many on Calvary's cross, taking sin, its consequent suffering, and yes, even death unto himself, thereby erasing these for us. All Christians know this and experience it progressively over time until they pass out of time itself and into glory. For there to be good news, there must first not only be a bad situation, but the realization of it. Adam, we know, created a bad situation, and for all of us, when he disobeyed God, plunging himself and his posterity into a state of sin, consequent suffering, and death. This situation pervades everything in human experience, including work. The effect of Adam's fall on his and our work is in Genesis 3, verses 17 to 19. Firstly, we learn the ground is cursed because of Adam's fall. So it's not only Adam and Adam's work of cultivating and keeping the creation that are cursed, but the means, or we can say the raw materials with which he works. These are no longer easily manipulated and unthinkingly integrated with Adam's labor. There is now pushback. Thorns and thistles are brought forth. Adam's work, then, will now be naturally obstructed. Nothing will simply go for him as planned. There will now need to be clearing, preparing, and workarounds in order to get something done. And even then, the final product will not be as envisaged. But also, the same obstructions will continue in his maintenance of the work he has completed. Thorns and thistles, of course, not only obstruct, they pinch and hurt, even draw blood. And with thorn-pierced hands, Adam nonetheless must continue to work if he hopes to survive. The clearing of the obstructions is not only frustratingly time-consuming and energy-sapping, even before the real work can be addressed, but itself is a painful process. We learn in Genesis 3 that in pain Adam shall eat the yield of his labor, and that in the sweat of his face shall he eat bread. The pain here is both physical, pointing to back-breaking work, and psychological or mental, pointing to the frustration of work and anxiety concomitant with survival. This is not only about the exertion of effort, since Adam also exerted effort before he fell, but about the effects of that effort upon Adam after his fall. Physical drainage, weariness, in short, blood, sweat, and tears. Now you may be thinking, gee, thanks for reminding me. I tuned in to be encouraged and uplifted, not reminded of this. But remember, to appreciate good news, we must first know that we are in a bad situation. Many people don't acknowledge this, even though they know this to be true. The gospel rescues us from the most consequential bad situation, our alienation from God, and the reality of being under his wrath. I had a pastor years ago who would say, "Your greatest problem is taken care of. Hallelujah." But that does not mean there are not other problems, including those facing us in our work. In this area, too, for us to apply the good news, we need first to acknowledge our bad situation, but then also understand how the good news can address that bad situation. In other words, how our work may be redeemed through the application of the gospel to it, as difficult as that may be at times. In Genesis 3:21, we learn that God had made animal skins for Adam and Eve. That requires the shedding of blood, without which there can be no remission of sins. In Adam's plight, he already has a head start. More next time.
Time once again for This Week in History. February 2nd, 1996. Dancer, actor, and choreographer Gene Kelly dies in his Beverly Hills home at the age of 83. He is remembered for films like An American in Paris and Singin' in the Rain. February 3rd, 1959. Do you recall what was revealed the day the music died? A snowy day and a young pilot untrained and uncertified in instrument-only flight led to the death this day of Buddy Holly, Richie Valens, and J.P. the Big Bopper Richardson, 5 minutes into a flight from Clear Lake, Iowa. Interestingly, Waylon Jennings, Dion DiMucci, and Tony Alsup were supposed to be on the plane, but ended up taking a cold bus ride to the next stop on a 23-stop tour. February 4th, 1789. 69 members of Congress cast their ballots to elect George Washington as the first president of the United States. While the Senate suggested his new title be His Highness the President of the United States of America and the Protector of Their Liberties, Washington chose simply Mr. President. And February 5th, 1937. Unhappy with a number of Supreme Court decisions, President Franklin Delano Roosevelt unveils a plan to expand the Supreme Court to as many as 15 judges, allegedly to make it more efficient. Critics said he was trying to pack the court and thus neutralize Supreme Court justices hostile to his New Deal. That was This Week in History, Events as we recorded them, as God ordained them.
That's our program for this week. Thanks for joining us. Holding All Things Together is a production of Redeemer Broadcasting, and the views expressed are those of the participants. If you'd like to help us continue to produce this program and distribute it to others, please consider supporting us. Our mailing address for your tax-deductible gift is Redeemer Broadcasting, P.O. Box 1520, Olive Bridge, New York, 12461. You may also email us at ministry@redeemerbroadcasting.org. For Holding All Things Together, I'm Dan Elmendorf.
And I'm Calvin Carter.
God willing, see you next week.